Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to A Musical Journey Like No Other, giving you an in-depth, invigorating, and exclusive look at the newest Smashing Pumpkins concept album, Autumn. This is 33 with William Patrick Corgan, and this is the 24th step on this interstellar musical expedition. We're now a few songs into Act 3, and you can stream songs from Acts 1 and 2 on all of your favorite streaming services. If it's your first time listening to 33, welcome. If you've been with us since the beginning, thanks for being fans. Thanks for tuning in. On this episode, we're having a world premiere of a song from the album Autumn. We'll be listening to and analyzing the track That Which Animates the Spirit. Of course, breaking it down with Billy Corgan, and we're also going to be going a little bit back in time. We're going back to 2018 and listening to Travels off of the Shiny and Oh So Bright Volume 1 album. We're also going to be talking a lot about Billy's trip to Disney with the family, a little Disney trivia, thoughts about social media concepts, or comments, I should say, and perceptions on the legacy and people's legacies, all that and much, much more. Kyle Davis, I know you got that passport ready. You're ready for Mexico. World is a Vampire Festival, March 4th. Smashing Pumpkins headlining. Tons of great music. NWA versus AAA. All that, much more details. NWATIX.com.
Also, April 15th through 30th, Australia. OneCon, 10 dates over 15 days. Smashing Pumpkins is going to be joined by Jane's Addiction, Emil and the Sniffers, Dreadhook. That is also more World is a Vampire. I'm happy to be a part of it. That passport's going to get lit up. I can't wait. And also, let's just plug what we do every time. You're listening. Make sure you like, subscribe, share, rate, and review the podcast wherever you're going to be doing this. iTunes, Spotify, iHeart app, wherever you get your podcasts. Go over to WPC33.com. Continue the conversation, playlist, lyrics, more. Also, swing by at SmashingPumpkins.com for merch, tour info. Let's face it. You like this already. You're here. You're listening. You know what else I like listening to? William Patrick Corgan. So let's kick it on over to the boss. Billy, how you doing today?
I'm fine, Kyle. Thank you. We have so much to talk about that instead of kibitzing, I'm going to jump right into our subject matter, because we're going to get into some deep stuff today, and this tees it up. So That Which Animates the Spirit, the second song off of Act 3. If you remember from the last episode, Shiny's come back. come out of the spacecraft, said what he wanted to say, something kind of obliquely like, hey, happy to be back. And now we go to the fun part of the big he's back. Of course, the XNI gets the final word. They're in charge of the proceedings. They've got the full fascist state out, flags flying, Klieg lights blaring, and they can't help themselves because it's their moment, really. Shiny, of course, is still a pawn in a much grander game. And so this is now the head of the XNI is doing his official welcome back to Shiny. So as you're about to hear, you know, he starts the song by saying, may I have your attention, please? And he sort of celebrates. Now Shiny goes from a negated, canceled figure, completely erased from history, to not only going to bring him back, now he gets the full hard sell, to use the wrestling term. He gets the full Zero is back. And you'll hear references to Zero in the song. Zero is back. There's choruses chanting. There are people dancing. They go completely the other way, and they wrap their arms around the mythos of Zero, the character. Not even Shiny. Not Glass. No, back to Zero, the OG character. The ones on the chat boards, the ones that they love that guy. They want him back. So they completely wrap their arms around. Zero is back. He's back. This is awesome. And, of course, Shiny standing there going, what is happening? This is bizarro world.
Because obviously from Shiny's perspective, Zero is well in the past. And now there's been so much evolution now to be in this third phase as Shiny. It must be kind of a shock for people. But also I could see the connections with you in your personal life. You know, the success of Autumn, if somebody listened to Beguiled and they weren't paying attention to a lot of the stuff that you've been doing for the past few years, it kind of makes that sort of connection that you would have from these folks that, oh, Zero's back. Oh, Billy Corgan's back. But in fact, you didn't go anywhere.
Well, Prince, when he had a bit of a comeback later in his life, his unfortunately short life, they asked him something about him being back. And he was like, but I never left, right? You know, which is something Prince certainly deserved the right to say. I can make the argument I have gone away and come back. I mean, certainly spiritually and emotionally, there are times where I was not able to be fully present in the room. I convinced myself I was fully present in the room. But looking back, I could see where I was really struggling to bring everything that I'm capable of to the table. And it's not to in any way diminish the work of Autumn, but I feel more capable of expressing who I really am and what I really feel at this moment in my life probably than I felt. And that's because of Autumn, meaning that's a process of recovery in motion, probably since about 1995 or so. So that's a long journey back to getting to a place, you know, if you want to go astrological, that's 4 cycles of 7 years. That's a long, long time to get back to a place where you go, okay, I can stand in this spot, and if they slay me where I stand, I'm cool with it, but I am going to speak my truth. And before we get into our discussion, which is going to be quite in-depth in segment 2 here of today's podcast, let me say this. There is a kind of a modern version of, hey, I'm going to speak my truth. And I'm saying this in support, to use the woke term, allyship, I guess would be the term. I love capital letters. I love that there are people in the national and I guess international conversation that have been marginalized and have not in historically had a voice at the bigger table of here's what the country or the world country, the people of the world are talking about. I love that there are people who have been historically marginalized that have a voice and are being listened to. It is awesome. So I'm saying that in support. That's not to sort of cover any track. Like, I really personally believe that everybody should have a say. And I won't bore you with my work behind the scenes with people who have been marginalized through the years, because I don't think it's about me. I think it's about them, which is why you wouldn't even know the things that I've done for people in marginalized communities. Just take it that for what it's worth. Back to Zero. Glass, Shiny. Imagine, and I think this is the fun part of the movie, he's been in a spaceship for 20 years by himself. In many ways, not necessarily the worst thing, right? You know, he got to be alone and sort of unbothered. He woke up on that one particular day, he punches in the code. He's like, I'm good. I'm going to go burn off in the sun. And wherever I go next, I'm cool with that too. I've seen enough. I've thought enough. I don't need to relive these memories any more than I already have. I've made all my peace. I've done everything I want to do, and I'm good. And this is not an endorsement of euthanasia. This is just this particular character made a decision, and all he knows is he gets to the edge of the sun, something unknown stops the ship, spins it around, and he comes back towards the planet. He's obviously landing on the planet, so he knows something's happening, doesn't know why he's being brought back. Door opens, and it's a stadium full of people. He walks down the stairs, big coronation-type feel, says what he's going to say, and now here comes the gross, got to get the TV ratings part. Here come the guest stars. Here come the dancing people. It's a full bad Grammy ceremony. Back to Satan again. So he stands there and sort of withstands Satan and has a good chuckle about it, why they celebrate the thing he created, which is really no longer his to own.
I think that's a good note for us to go out on. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, world premiere of That Which Animates the Spirit right here on 33 with William Patrick Corgan.
Now available for pre-order at MadamZuzus.com. The autographed 4LP box set of Autumn, the new album by the Smashing Pumpkins. This 4LP colored vinyl pressing is limited to 1,333 units and will be machine numbered and autographed by the Smashing Pumpkins, Billy Corgan, Jimmy Chamberlain, James Iha, and Jeff Schroeder. The limited edition box set includes the three-act, 33-song rock opera That Is Autumn and 10 exclusive unreleased songs over the course of 5 7-inch singles that will not be available for streaming or found anywhere else. Go to MadamZuzus.com to pre-order today. Free shipping in the USA. 3-unit limit per order. Pre-order will ship after April 21st, 2023.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways I imagine you haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Margaret Atwood, Questlove, Cate Blanchett, and Oscar Isaac. If that sounds like a varied group of people, it's because it is. I always wanted to make a show where one week we could sit with a politician like Beto O'Rourke, the next an author like Min Jin Lee, or TV titans like Bill Hader and Quinta Brunson. Basically, this is a podcast driven by curiosity and an abundance of research. Conversations where people actually start to sound like people. In recent weeks, I sat with Dan Levy, Ava DuVernay, Benny Safdie, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. I hope to see you there.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
My name is Ariel. I moved to the U.S. at 19. I spoke no English and I struggled finding job opportunities. Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, Smashing Pumpkins fans. It's kind of like calling a racetrack race. And in lane one, Smashing Pumpkins fans. And in lane two, William Patrick Corgan fans. In lane three, none of the above. Welcome back, 33 Podcasts. We're having a lot of fun here today. We're about to take a very deep dive. But before we do, That Which Animates the Spirit, a world premiere. I love, love, love the opportunity of this song, which delves into the idea of the absurdity of not celebrating what I've created, but somebody else celebrating it their way. Let's call it the schmaltzy, fascist, end of the world, satanic way. So enjoy.
Yes, she hears a comeback.
Welcome back, music fans. You just listened to the world premiere of That Which Animates the Spirit off of the Autumn album. We are diving deep into Act 3. Things are really rocking and rolling, and I am just feeling it. And Billy, I mean, it's been an exciting time. I mean, for music, for wrestling, for everything in your life right now. And I know that you're still enjoying some time in Florida right now, too.
Well, that's not public, but by the time this podcast comes out, Joe Galli, I will be long gone. So we can talk about my current vacation from Florida. And full disclosure, if I haven't said it in segment one, because sometimes we shoot these things out or a little behind the scenes, my children are in the room silently watching cartoons. So if you hear them talking, we're all on vacation. Yes, I'm the solo dad on vacation at Disney. It's the setup for a nightmare or memories that last a lifetime, or perhaps both. So
can't hide that tan.
What's that?
You can't hide that tan. That's the tell.
Goths are not interested in tanning, let me tell you, Kyle. I know you're not a goth.
You don't have a choice when you're in Florida, though. I mean, the sun overrides your gothness.
Oh, you don't know who's goth. It's that dark.
Well, I turn kind of a goth red, let's just say. I get goth pink before I get goth.
Irish goth red.
Yes. You know, being here at Disney and the megalith that exists, it got me thinking about some things. I love to think a lot about Walt Disney when I'm in the parks, because it's the most beautiful part, I guess, of his vision, in that he made something come to life. He was obviously a great creator, created a lot of IP, as we say. We're all fully aware of things like Snow White, but if you remember, Snow White was a grim fairy tale, I believe. One of the reasons Disney took public intellectual property was because he didn't have to pay for it. But what's interesting is when you think of Snow White, you think of Disney's Snow White. Like, Joe, Kyle, and I could go out and make our version of Snow White, but everybody would compare it, of course, to Disney branded everything in a way that's very, very unique. And you can really still feel it, although the tide really is turning in the last few years at these parks where, let's call it, the post-Walt Disney's death eras have now completely taken over. And there's very little evidence of sort of the when you wish upon a star version of Disney that I grew up on, which is fine. I think that's cool in that those kids and my kids can have their own version of those magical moments like I did. But in thinking about Walt, and then in my weird brain, putting it together with another piece, this might be one of the most intense conversations we've ever had. We'll see. I'll tee it up and we'll let the boys dive in. I have not prompted them on what I want to talk about today. So let's dive in. A friend of mine was talking to me, a friend of mine in wrestling was talking to me about, because he's the type of person who would say, read internet comments. I do not 99% of the time read comments. It's just not informative to me. I can pretty much feel what people think without having to read what they think, because honestly, feeling it is probably more accurate than what they're saying, because of course there's the crowd that doesn't say things. And as I go through life, I feel that my public persona, the perception of me, has shifted more into the positive, certainly in the last few years. So I'm not trying to undo that with what I'm about to say, but I want to dive into something, because I do think there comes a point where you have to kind of stand there or say there. Sorry, it's a weird image in my mind. It's like standing on a corner and saying, okay, this is a moment where I sort of need to talk. And it's not to go backwards. It's actually to go forwards. The friend was saying something along the lines of like, they'll see comments about me. And even recently, I think I referred to it in a recent podcast. There was a real estate article about me. And for some reason, it was probably bot generated. But it referred to me in the article about a former piece of real estate that I owned in New York as a conspiracy crank. But the friend was saying something along the lines of like, people think you're a right-wing nut and something like that. This kind of stuff, this politically divisive language. So let's start here in the discussion. First of all, if you accept the labels that society or culture place upon you, you are basically agreeing to the rules of that society or culture. I don't agree to those rules. Now, if you wanted to define me as left or right, I would say I'm probably pretty much on the center, maybe one shade to the right, but then socially I'm way, way more to the left. So I think if you kind of did the math, and I'm probably pretty much in the middle. There's tons of issues I'm particularly liberal on, and there's tons of issues that I'm not right on, more like it has to do with financial stuff because of welfare states and things like that, because, you know, I'm somebody who's made money and I don't necessarily agree all ways that tax monies get spent. But that's pretty normal. I think that's how a lot of people feel. I don't think that's anything unusual. And particularly a person in my position, those are things that you have to have conversations with really expensive lawyers about. So it's kind of in your face, whether you want it to be or not. But I'm not saying everybody and their money isn't important to them. I'm saying it's talking about myself. But again, if you accept, like, let's call it cultural, political, social labels, oh, you're this, that, you're basically saying you agree to the rules of the game. I don't agree to any of those rules. And I don't give a damn about any of those rules. I didn't agree with those rules in 1976 when I was a kid. Obviously, I was a weirdo my whole life. I got picked on and bullied in school because I didn't agree to those rules. And I'm not talking about the rules of the teachers. I'm talking about the rules of the hallways. Neil Peart, the great lyricist of Rush, used to write about the politics of the suburban culture in the hallways and the classrooms and stuff like that. I wish I could quote some of his beautiful lyrics off the top of my head. But he really kind of nailed that, that sort of stress tension of like the end of youth and the beginning of like, what, do I got to go out and get a normal job? Like, oh, it's not who I am. I'm a free spirit, right? So I really resonated with those things. And I picked a life for myself, or someone else picked it for me, depends on who you ask, where I decided I wanted to be free. And if I made any mistake, it was thinking that I had to adopt the system of the music business to get what I wanted, and then therefore I would find my freedom. So in essence, I agreed to the rules of the music business, which in many ways I shouldn't have. And I allowed myself to be put in that system because I thought, if I can accomplish something in this, then I one day will be free. And all I did was kind of reconfirm what I'd fought against my whole life, which is I allowed myself to be labeled. You're alternative. You're this. You're that. You're grunge. And here we are. And I'm still sort of more subtly so resisting the bonds of that. Where this dovetails with Disney, and then I want to let the boys kind of chime in so I don't just monologue on forever, is when you think about public perception, and for the sake of this thought experiment, think whatever you want to think about me, good or bad. But maybe in this thought experiment, you can think of, let's call it the negative things if you want. I'm saying that laughingly. Whatever you think about me, or whatever you think you know about me, or whatever you're uncomfortable with about me as a person, first of all, I'm totally comfortable with that. So that ought to tell you something. Like, if I'm not afraid, then what is it about the label that has a power? Or am I doing this other Rorschach thing where by talking about it, I'm giving it power? You know, we could pretend it doesn't exist, but then it's out there. And that's what I'm saying. So I have a friend in my ear sort of saying, you know, there's this perception of you out there. And I've heard all that stuff. And I gave him the same speech, which is like, I don't accept those labels, but okay, people can think whatever they want. But as I like to say, let's address the elephant in the room. So let's say there's a Billy Corgan elephant. You can paint it whatever color you want.
Obviously black.
He's goth pink, actually.
I like that. Let's go with goth pink. So the goth pink Billy Corgan elephant, sort of, let's set him aside for a moment. Let's talk about the Walt Disney elephant. If you're a Disney fan, as I am, I'm talking about Walt Disney, the person, the man. If you're a fan of Walt Disney, the creator, he's one of the greatest creators that's ever lived. If you go around in Hollywood circles like I have for many, many years, you will hear, and it's a regular thing you will hear, there's a lot of negativity against Walt Disney, the person, for the way he operated his business. I don't need to get into that. Feel free to Google. And the reason I don't want to get into it is not because I'm afraid of it. It's got nothing to do with me. But again, by using the labels, it sort of agrees with the argument. And I'm not saying I agree or disagree. I'm saying that's not what the point I'm trying to make. So when you're standing in a billion-dollar business, which is Disney World in this case, you think of all the movies, all the things that were created, all the rides, all the pictures, all the hotel stays. I mean, just the megalith that is the Disney brand that started literally with one person in a un-air-conditioned room somewhere in, you know, Kansas, drawing Oswald the Rabbit before Mickey Mouse. How does that image of that guy in a room in 1920-something or before jive with this thing that you'll be sitting in one of the biggest studios in Hollywood and you bring up Disney and right out here come the, well, he was this and he was that. And so if you agree with that assessment, and there are historical reviews on that, and I've read those too. If you agree with that assessment of Walt Disney as a business person or as, let's say, a human being, if you want to judge him against history, against his views or who he was as a person of the world, does that mean you shouldn't go to Disney World? Does that mean that it negates everything that he created? In essence, where is the line on those things? I'm not doing the average argument, which is something on the line of which they used to say, Pablo Picasso was an a-hole, so therefore I don't like his paintings. I've made that analogy before. I'm trying to do something slightly more sophisticated, which is like, okay, so now let's go back to the two elephants and I'll get out of the way. If you want to use Walt Disney as the elephant or you want to use William Patrick Corgan as the elephant, feel free. I can talk about William Patrick Corgan, the elephant, a lot better than I can talk about Walt Disney, the elephant. But the reason I'm comparing and contrasting is he's is a more successful version of, like, call it the positive and negative archetypes of what happens in the world. And I'm the less successful version by far. What I'm trying to say is, if you think you can get through life unscathed, if you think you can get through life without stepping on a toe, if you think you can get through life without making mistakes, if you think you can get through life without having to evolve your views, if you think you can get through life without suffering personally, if you think you can get through life without causing suffering, even unconsciously or inadvertently, then you're not a human being. You're something else. You're a robot-generated creation, or you're something as beautifully drawn as a Disney cartoon where nobody dies and everybody holds hands at the end and cries as the rainbow sort of sings back to them. So that's the kind of thing I'm trying to tee up. Jump in, boys.
Yeah, I want to jump in right here too. And you could take a look at it from a bunch of different angles there. And where you really finished right now is, in society right now, what I'm seeing, especially across social media, and I particularly saw this when I was working in journalism, is there's so many people out there that are trying to tear things down and to lash out to people and to dig up. Recently unearthed is always the thing that people that you see in news articles that, like, and then it's always aimed at tearing people down. And when you become a titan of industry like your Disney's or even like your Gerald Ford's, obviously he had his faults and there were lots of things about his personal life that, you know, were very unagreeable to a vast majority of people. But at the same point, you have to understand that the legacy of him building the back of what essentially became all of American industry from that time and through the process of the assembly line with the vehicle.
You said Gerald Ford. I think you were talking about Henry Ford.
Henry Ford. Thank you. Gerald Ford didn't do nearly that much.
I was like, wow, you're giving Gerald Ford.
I give Gerald Ford a lot of credit
right
there.
Hard sell is
hard sell there.
Favorite president.
But, but when you have all these people out there that reach these upper levels, you're right. At the end of the day, we're all still human. And there's going to be faults and there's going to be failures. And do you want to completely destroy a person's life because of whatever mistakes that they've made? And to take it back to wrestling, there was a reason why the Briscoe brothers were blacklisted for a while, but they apologized for the mistake that they made. And there's no reason that they should have been held back from the great things. And we in the NWA didn't hold them back, and they became the champions with the Crockett Cup. Sorry, all the fans out there that aren't big wrestling fans, but, you know, that's where it's going to come back to in our lives. And to think about the way that social media, you know, weaponizes people to find the faults that we are as humans and then to tear us down and to continually belabor it. But I feel like the one way to battle it, and what we're seeing a lot right now, and the one way to make sure that it stops, is when you stop apologizing and you just tell people to F off. They point out something, they point out an error you made or something like that. They try to tear you down. But the conversation stops when you say, you're insignificant, I don't care, F off. And then stops the momentum.
Can I spur off?
I am soft.
Can I spur off in a different direction?
Please.
And I appreciate your insight. And it's not to sort of push it aside. I'm just kind of coming at it from a slightly different angle here. And here's what I'm trying to say. And this is where I had some level of illumination. And that's why I wanted to talk about it. And it particularly dovetails into today's new debut of, you know, That Which Animates the Spirit. In essence, it dovetails with those themes. Quick reset. We're not talking about cancel culture. Okay. In essence, to Joe's point, sort of like, let's call it the anecdotal aspect of how to deal with cancel culture, which is to say it's not as valuable as you think it is. I'm coming at it from a slightly different thing. Let's call it the super intrapersonal mixed with the spiritual aspect of, you know, the famous saying, if you see a Buddha on the road, kill him or chop him in half with an axe. Sorry, I'm trying to reposition myself in a Buddhistic point of perspective to be able to talk properly. Here's what I'm trying to say. It's hard to get at, particularly in a shorter segment. What I'm saying is a really, really complicated version, which boils down like a Willy Wonka stew into something very simple, which is a very complicated, sophisticated, down to simple version of I don't care. Here's what I mean by I don't care. I'm standing in Walt Disney's park. I can absorb every negative, and I've read 10 books on Disney. I know all those facts. I'm a Disney file. I could tell you about the parks and the movies and the things, and I'm one of those boring people. I can stand there, and you can tell me, hey, all these horrible things are true about him, the way he did his business. Here's a quote. I have a recording. And I can stand there and go, yeah, I don't care. And I don't mean I don't care like it's not important. It is important. I'm saying is it's just not my value system. My value system is able to kind of weigh all these things out and make a decision that at the end of the day, you showed me a perfect person and I'll show you somebody who's on a poster somewhere. But by and large, perfect people do not exist. That's not to excuse bad behavior. That's to say I no longer accept this idea of a puritanical society that if we just sort of are mean enough to each other or stringent enough, we're going to achieve some sort of world thing that, you know, we're all going to end up holding hands. I just don't buy it. I don't buy it as a human condition, but that doesn't mean on a spiritual level that it's not worth striving for and it's not important to me. And that's what I mean by I don't care. So on one hand, I'm doing something which is very ego-full. I'm talking about myself at length, which, you know, you have to have an ego to do, to essentially make the point that at the end of the day, and this is the whole resonant aspect of Autumn, and I hope you get this message either before or after this particular podcast in the music, including the music to come, you can erase Zero, you can erase Billy Corgan, you can erase my pictures, you can nullify me, you know, you can disregard me. I don't care. And I don't, it's not the boasting, hitting my chest, I don't care, come get me at the end of Scarface. It's the spiritual version of, you're not the possessor of the key to kill me in terms of truly kill me. That's a God thing. You don't possess that power. Now you can take my body, you can take my life, you can take my name, you can draw funny mustaches on me, have at it. But that's what I'm saying is, and it goes back to the original point, when you get into like left, right, I don't, that's irrelevant to me. I'm worried about a final judgment in the eyes of the person I believe, or the personage is my creator. If you don't believe in that, that's cool. You could think I'm a dummy for believing that. That's cool too. I believe at some point I will have to stand in front of some force in the universe. I would hope it was female, and I mean that jokingly, but I hope it's of the divine feminine and not the divine masculine, but maybe it's both.
Why? Why is that?
Because in my mind, it resonates a softer. At a critical juncture in my life, when I was writing Mary, Star of the Sea, I was going to a grotto in Key West, Florida, and there was a grotto in a church called Mary, Star of the Sea Church, and there's a grotto there, and some of the fans I know have gone out of their way to visit that same grotto where I would sit and pray. And when I was at a low point in my life, I would pray to Mother Mary, and I found a grace and a softness that I'd never experienced in my life. Was that in my mind? Can't tell you. But I felt something different that was more akin to something I wanted from my mother, and I was able to make peace with my mother and move on with certain aspects of my life. Whoever makes the final judgment, and again, I'm being somewhat jokey, but I would hope it was Mother Mary and, you know, maybe not St. Michael with the sword.
It's interesting to me that you try to take the wind out of that by saying I'm being jokey, but you're really not being jokey. You're actually sharing something pretty intent and that connects to you. And this whole conversation, there's a lot of different levels we could dive into this, be it, you know, the perception of no one's ever going to know where you're coming from or think how you're going to think or understand who you are as a human being because they're on the outside looking in, or the fact that could you separate an artist from what they create and all this other stuff. At the end of the day, I'm listening to somebody that I respect, who I have a legit relationship with, that these people know as William Patrick Corgan, Billy Corgan, the Smashing Pumpkins, but I know you as a human being. And I'm listening to a guy who is introspective, probably dealing with the world around him right now and really reanalyzing where he stands in that world. As you pointed out, this new album, we've been talking about it now for 24 episodes, is definitely, whether you realize it or not, pretty much a biographical aspect, I think, of what you might be going through in the world that we live in currently.
Well, they always are. This is just the first time I ever talked about it any length or depth.
Are you comfortable with talking about it now? That's really what I want to know. Is this, are you getting some sort of like epiphany of like, this has always been there on the cusp of my tongue, but now I'm realizing that this is where these kind of diverge into one another talking about it publicly?
It breaks down in this way for me. What are we fighting for? Are we fighting for a peaceful planet? A clean planet where people don't have to drink horrible toxic water? I mean, what are we fighting for? When you're focused on celebrity and what celebrities do and don't do, you're probably not spending that energy fighting for a better planet. You might think you are, but you're really not. So what I'm trying to say is, on one level, you're dealing with the hyper-attenuated ego of a celebrity that's turned into an avatar that works openly with the avatar as a device of creation and also kind of mockery. Carrie Fisher wrote in her great book, Postcards from the Edge, that when she used to walk in a room and she had weight on her, and of course, you know, everybody had seen her as hot Princess Leia, and now she's a little older and she's got some weight on her, first thing she would say is, she'd walk in a room and say, yeah, I know I'm fat. And she said in her book, which is so beautifully articulated, it was a way to neuter the argument. I'd rather make the argument myself than let it somebody make it for me. So what I'm saying is I'm making this argument for myself. One person will hear it as like, oh my God, the guy drones on for 20 minutes about him, me, as Pat Kenny of the NWA would say, me. But that's all anybody really has is the me. But if you're really a spiritual person, you're trying to get around the me to the spirit with a capital S, what some people would call an oversoul. There's different versions of it. If you want to get right with God, you have to both navigate the ego, which is I need this ego to operate in the world. But at the end of the day, please judge that my heart was good and I was trying to get past my own failings as a human being to get to the good part. And this is where it gets vague. And I kind of want to go one more, sort of jump into the pool one more time and see if we can land on something a little more concrete, because it's easy in spiritual life to get into a lot of vagaries that people kind of nod their head and they know what you mean. And then it doesn't stick with you. It's like a cheap donut. You know what I mean? It tastes good when it's going down, but then it doesn't stick with you. I want to say something that'll stick with everybody. I'm at a point in my life where I'm as happy as I've ever been, which is saying something. I'm lucky in so many ways. I've never been more appreciative of my opportunities, my friends, my associates. I don't want to use the word humble because even that carries kind of a loaded connotation because that's easy to mock. Let's call it like, if you want to be sympathetic to those listening, I'm in a good spot, right? I'm in a good spot. Like I can look around and go, I've had a good run. Things are good. I feel pretty good. I wish I'd realized some of these things about 15 years ago before I had a couple wrinkles on my face, but okay, I'm okay. You know, I'm just still dealing with the death of my father. My mother's death over 25 years ago is a sort of a constant, you know, planet that comes back around in different ways. You know, I have to look back at the wreckage of my life, including the wreckage of my band. There's a spot in life where you can kind of stop. You hit pause and you go, okay, this isn't bad. You're at Disney World with your kids and you're having a beautiful day. And it got me thinking, and this is where I'm trying to kind of bring it back away from the donut part. It got me thinking too, does it really matter what people think? And I'm not talking about the, hey, don't care what people think. It's like, does it really matter? And the answer, we all know the answer is no. But in the world of social cachet, it does have value. It does have value, particularly in terms of business. You know, who I am perceived as in the world has definitely at times hurt my business, my ability to generate income and opportunity for myself and my band. Okay, that's fine. But that's not what I'm getting at. I'm saying is, does it really matter to your life what people think of you and the energy that you spend trying to navigate and manage what people's perceptions are of you? Why do people have PR firms? Why do we market? Why do we do all these? Because we're trying to manage perception. All I'm trying to say is after all these years in public life, I've reached a point of like exhaustion, but that's the good exhaustion. It's like the exhaustion of doing a big workout or a long run. You're tired, but you're clear. You know, you've kind of expended some toxins. And, you know, Disney World is a perfect spot to sort of expel those mental toxins. It's like, how can I put it? I wrote Autumn to express something that was very difficult to express, and you can even hear me in this format, which is my format, to express something that's very difficult. It's like saying, I care, but I don't care. It's like, huh? How does that work? How can you care and not care at the same time? But that is a spiritual principle. The I care is I'm aware, I see, and I understand what you're saying. I can see why you perceive me this way, and I don't feel the need to correct you. Because I'm not in fear. I'm not operating from fear. So if you need to think that about me because it gives you something, have at it. Enjoy. That's what I mean about if you see a Buddha on the road, split him in half with an axe or whatever the analogy is. So I'm basically saying I'm ready to be split in half by an axe. And I don't mean that literally. I'm saying is if you need to kill Zero, which is what that which animates the spirit is about the resurrection of Zero in a very public way. If you need to kill Zero, go ahead. I no longer feel the need to manage that garden because it really doesn't have anything to do with me, Billy, anymore. I'm just Billy Corgan, and I could sit here and bore you to tears with all my faults and all the terrible, horrible things I should have done. And at the end of the day, it's kind of irrelevant. All I can say, and it's not an appeal, and it's not a way to reel it back, like, here's my last thing, and I pass around the hat so you put some money in it, is hopefully, and this goes back to the Bible, judge a person by their works. And that's where Disney becomes a fitting analogy. It's like, judge Walt Disney by his works, and judge me, hopefully, in the same way. Judge me by my works. Was my heart good, or was my heart impure? And I'm fine with that judgment, is what I'm trying to say. So when people kind of get in my head and try to tell me what they think, they, whoever they are, which obliquely includes this audience, that's all good.
I think what you're also really touching on now is sort of the modern version of trying to reach nirvana, that presence, that moment where you're completely one with yourself and one with everything around you. And I feel like in this modern environment, that's even more difficult to do because there is so much emphasis on yourself and projecting a certain image of yourself out there more than there's ever been in human history, I believe. And so in order to reach that point, it's not just sitting underneath the tree, crossing your legs and meditating for years on end, which honestly probably sounds actually really nice right now at this point.
yeah, no Wi-Fi.
Exactly. I tell people this all the time. It's like, if I could live without social media and it wasn't part of my career, I could totally do that. And I think I'd be better off for it. So we're in that sort of space for it. And then also to be able to combine that with, you know, what is your true legacy in life? And what does it really all matter? To reach that in this new modern era that we have, you have to find a new path, a new avenue to do it, because what worked 20 years ago, 200 years ago, 2,000 years ago is probably not going to work today.
So let me flip that on the other side, and I think this is a good way to end it. And this is the spiritual quotient of it. I love what you said, because if you look at it in the flip side, it's a tremendous opportunity. It's like the higher the mountain, the higher the accomplishment. So we as humans are more stressed than we probably have ever been in human history in terms of what's being put on our systems. You know, one of the talk this week is this horrible accident that happened with the train and all the chemical spill. Well, you know, the human body is dealing with, I read this thing once, since the 1870s, I think there's 150,000 plus non-organic chemicals in the world that our body is not designed to navigate, right? Stuff like that. So we have a tremendous opportunity to come against something which we really aren't designed for, and that includes social media. Like, we're not evolved systemically to deal with social media. And it gets into everything. It gets into people making different decisions, even about who they want to be. I'm not just talking about sexuality, but even vis-a-vis gender. I think it's a fantastic discussion. I know many people are super uncomfortable with it. I think it's a fantastic discussion. I'd say it this way, and this is a good way to end. I'm saying the positive version of all this. If you believe in a radical way that systems are there to be torn down, particularly if they oppress something, good. But spend a moment when you're tearing down the wall, to use a Pink Floyd analogy, what you're going to put in its place, because by and large, human beings work off systems. They don't work off of free space anarchy. And I'm not talking about anarchy with spears. I'm talking about anarchy with show me where to at least stand in line. You know what I mean? And I think this is the last cool point I can make. And it's something I didn't think I was going to talk about today. If you really think about Disney, it's an incredibly weaponized system of, we've got all these people and we got to get them through the park. And they've spent tremendous amount of energy figuring out how to get you in this line to this spot to go to this merch thing, right? And if you really think about it, that's life. There's a lot of lines to stand in. There's a lot of appointments you have to make. And now, play with my stupid analogy, now imagine going to Disney where there was no line. It was just complete, like anybody could go anywhere. You know what I'm saying? It's a very poor analogy. I apologize for it, but I kind of like the image, right? Like, imagine going to Disney and there's just no lines and there's nobody to tell you where to go and people are trying to bum rush rides. And that's what I'm saying. Systems are not a bad thing. So I'm not afraid of systems being torn down. There's a lot of systems of the 20th century that were particularly oppressive that do need to be torn down. which is why I'm not uncomfortable with the discussion around gender, because I think that's fine. Like, have at it, like, tear it down and build something better that accommodates more people and puts more people in the system so more people can be successful and happy. But when you're doing that, and this goes back to the superego part, my podcast, understand that there are going to be people like me that are going to go, sorry, I'm not standing in that line the way you want me to stand in that line. And if I can walk around it and go to the front, I'm going to do it. And if you think about where we started this discussion, the left-right construct of traditional American culture, at least in the last 100 years or so, I'm not going to stand in that line. Don't try to put me in that line. Don't ask me to stand in line. If you want to judge me for not standing in line, have at it. But wherever I'm going to be, I'm going to be laughing somewhere, playing a much bigger, more interesting game than the one of like, are you on this team or are you on that team? Do you like the Packers or do you like the Eagles? Very boring if you really think about it. When we come back, it's not a classic track. Thank you for the laugh. Kids be quiet. Oh my God, don't make me yell.
What a segue.
Kids be quiet and don't make me yell and blow my podcast here. When we come back, the soon-to-be classic track, Travels, from the Smashing Pumpkins. We'll be right back.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways I imagine you haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Margaret Atwood, Questlove, Cate Blanchett, and Oscar Isaac. If that sounds like a varied group of people, it's because it is. I always wanted to make a show where one week we could sit with a politician like Beto O'Rourke, the next an author like Min Jin Lee, or TV titans like Bill Hader and Quinta Brunson. Basically, this is a podcast driven by curiosity and an abundance of research. Conversations where people actually start to sound like people. In recent weeks, I sat with Dan Levy, Ava DuVernay, Benny Safdie, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. I hope to see you there.
Check the backseat. Check the backseat.
All right, come here.
Check the backseat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the backseat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back, music fans. You just listened to Travels off the Shiny and Oh So Bright Volume 1 album. And you know, talking about all this Disney stuff is bringing back a lot of fond memories. I used to be one of those annual pass holders when I was a kid growing up in Southern California when people could actually afford it. One of my favorite places to go next to Indiana Jones was the old Tiki Room. Get myself a delicious Dole Whip, and now I'm craving one of those right now, Billy.
Did you know, Joe Galli, I'm going to test your Tiki Room trivia. Did you know that the Tiki Room show that you now would go see at Disneyland and Disney World, and I assume the other parks around the world, is a truncated show? The original show was longer.
I did not know that, but I also don't find that surprising in the least. Disney always tweaks their stuff a little bit here and there. Sometimes it's more dramatic when you see something like what they did, the update to Pirates of the Caribbean or something like that. But it doesn't surprise me. I wonder why they shortened it.
Well, I think it was to get more people through the attraction. And they did have a problem. There were two more songs in the show. One was a big bird that came down and swung on a swing, and it was maybe a little too sexy for the kids. And the other one was a sort of goddess would come up in the middle fountain, which is why that fountain doesn't really make sense anymore because they don't do the gimmick they would do. And there was something with like water and a goddess. And at the time when they killed the song or the spot in the show, it was because the goddess, and here we go, of course, the goddess was scaring the kids.
There's a lot of stuff at Disney that scares kids, though. They keep plenty of scary stuff around.
Well, that's one of the great arguments against Disney and why certain parents through the years have told me they won't let their kids watch Disney is because Disney put in too much dark stuff. I think Disney put in dark stuff because he wanted kids to navigate the pathos. That's my own particular opinion, because that's something that I do. I think if you cannot, in essence, what are you fighting for if you don't sort of confront the things that scare you the most? If you can get the original Tiki Room soundtrack, which I think maybe Disney Records, which is still out there as part of their vast entities. But if you get the original Tiki Room soundtrack, which I bought one for Augustus off of eBay, you can hear the original show, which is about 5 or 7 minutes longer. And here's a sideline. At one point, I think it was in the 90s, they figured, okay, the show's run long enough. They did a new show with Gloria Estefan and somebody else whose name escapes me. And people hated the show universally. It was like completely panned. They only ran it for 2 years, and then they went back to the original. So there's your Tiki Room trivia from your mid-level Disney fan, William Patrick Corrigan. Let's talk about Travels, unless you have something, Kyle.
No, I don't know Disney at all. This is a blind spot for me. I lived in Florida for many years, but in my youth, I always liked older people. So childlike wonderment and things like that, I threw to the side, and Disney to me was childlike wonderment.
I think Kyle's about to have a Disney kind of moment in his life. We need to crack that egg open, get to young Kyle. Maybe that's the spot we're looking for to get Kyle off the couch.
I mean, Kyle off the couch. I am just found a place in Florida. Looks like it's going to happen. Coming up middle March. Life's moving on, making my transition, finding my way. And, you know,
you're making travels.
I was told not to. I'm making travels. That's right. I love this song, by the way. Travels. I was listening to lyrics online, strangely enough. Couldn't find this track, had to go with a live version of it. And I like live versions, a little acoustic. So this really hit me on a thing. Seems like Travels was transitioning from one place to another, kind of finding your way. And when I looked it up on here, I saw an interview with you that said basically this was a song that you had written at a time where you also found yourself kind of crossing over from one point to another, almost the death or life to one to the other.
Yeah, I wrote this song, I guess, circa 2017, and I was staying with a friend who's no longer a friend, which is kind of part of the story. I would stay with that friend a lot, and I was coming down with the flu. It was like a COVID-level bad 30-day, but I didn't know that yet, but I was getting really sick, and I was laying on the couch writing the song because I knew it was something was happening, but I felt awful. So somehow this song is forever mixed in my mind with the awful experience of illness coming and then sort of expressing something, which I think really does connect with today's thematics, both with that which animates the spirit and the stuff we talked about in segment two. Let me read the lyrics. We haven't done enough of this, unfortunately, and I think this is a good time for me to get a little poetic. So if you bear with me, let me read these lyrics because I think they will set up what we want to say here. See love, see time, see death, see life. See tears, see bright, see day from night. See pause, see tomb, see breath, see moon. See sun, see stars, see God, see ours. That's where I belong. I could read the rest, but you kind of get the point. It's not very often I write something so simple and to the point, and it is sort of allegorically stuff that I deal with a lot. Too many sun and moons and stars in my music. But I love the analogy here because I think, and it goes back to what I was saying before, there are those moments where you're standing in the right spot. For me, it was in the middle of Disney World with 8 gazillion people around me screaming and having a good time. You know, we've all had those moments, you know, whether you're on a beach on mushrooms or something, there's that moment where you sort of have that clarity and you come into a place of acceptance and knowing. And I guess that's what I mean by care and don't care. Let's call that acceptance and knowing. This is somebody who's having a moment of acceptance and knowing. I see everything that you want me to see, or I see, better said, I see everything that's important, right? Second verse, see eyes, see shine, see seas, see mine, see shadows wine, see ripple, see blind, see you, see me, see destiny, see knots untied, see knots that bind. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back here, but what I love about this, and this is a song that is another one of those songs where I can't believe people really haven't found this song. It probably has more to do with the way the modern world works than the quality of the tune. It's quite a beautiful production. Rick Rubin had a lot to do with how this song turned out on the record, and forever grateful to Rick for that, because our original version was more kind of too busy and had too much going on. Rick got us to strip away all that artifice and get down to the soul of the song, and I think that's what shines through here. What I'm trying to say, well or not well, and to you personally, well or not well, what I'm trying to say is there are those moments where you go, you know what? Clock's ticking. I get it. I wish I could go back and fix about 8,000 things. I can't. I see where I'm going, and I wish I could change some of those trajectories, but it's too late. I'm kind of, this is who I am, and I can't change that either. The best thing I can do is find some peace, inner strength, and knowing, if you really think about it, it gives you the best chance of course correcting if you want to course correct. Fear doesn't get you anywhere, but the strength of like, I'm cool with who I am. I know deep in there, in amongst all this rigmarole, scars and bars, is a good person. And I hope that's what comes through. And if that's an ego-y thing to say, well, then it is. I hope, and it's not a begging on my knees, although I'm on my knees as I talk to you. I'm not on my knees begging, hey, love me. I said in a previous episode, I want to come in from the cold. And there's various iterations of that. Today's version is, I don't really care if I come in from the cold. If I'm in permanent exile, that's cool. It's all good. I've had an incredible life, incredible life. My focus now is more so on my family. My focus is more so now on my own happiness. If you really understand my life in music, my happiness was tied to success. Success would help me be happy. It didn't work. I had to learn that lesson the hardest way you can possibly learn it. And we can talk about that maybe another time. But the way I did it, and it's kind of interesting, I was willing to find happiness for others. I'm going to write a song that you love to get me the thing that I need. So it wasn't a gift because it came with strings attached. But the beautiful thing was I still did something beautiful to get what I needed. I could have done something ugly, but I chose to do something beautiful. So whether I've written one song you love or 50, and even when we laugh about the crowd, like he hasn't done anything good since, you know, 95 or whatever. Well, I still did something good up to 95. Whoever you are in that churn, right? At least understand that at the heart of it, even if I attached it to survival, the reason I did these things, and I'm about to yell at my kids because they're talking and they're not supposed to talk. No talking, please. Just be kind to your dad. The heart's there. I had to have enough of a heart to write something that you loved in a certain kind of honest way. The songs that you love, even though they're wrapped up in confectionery contrivances, certain clothes and certain eyeliner, the heart of them and the reason they resonate and the reason people play my songs at their children's births, people's funerals, and people get married to my songs, and my songs are still regularly showing up in television shows and commercials. The reason those things exist is because I got that part right. I'm not asking for credit. I'm saying understand on this spiritual journey, that helps me get to where I'm at now, where I can care and not care. I can accept and be aware enough. I can accept why you love what you love and why you don't love what you love. And I can look you in the face without anger, without malice, without projection, and say, I don't care. I don't care if you don't like my new music. I don't care if you don't like what I've said publicly in the last 15 to 20 years or the last 30 years. And it's not the I don't care of defiance. I'm being repetitive, but I need to say it again here. It's the I don't care because it doesn't have anything to do with my happiness. And that is not some modern 2023 self-empowerment message that will get me a meme and get me some Instagram clicks. I'm saying is I figured out in a rare moment of clarity that how you perceive me is not connected to my happiness. It has nothing to do with my happiness. My happiness has everything to do with whether or not I fulfill my purpose as a father, as a partner, as a business owner, as a creator. That's my happiness. Blessings to those of you who are listening. I hope you find your happiness in your own way. I wish it had been simpler, less complicated, and I wish I had only two labels attached to my name and not 57. I wish my Wikipedia was a little shorter is the joke I would make. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. I will be digital dust here soon, and that's cool too. And if one song lasts or no songs last, that's cool too.
That is so freaking healthy that I hope one day I can get there. And I got to be honest with you, the journey of us in this episode to get to that conciseness that you just threw out there, I think maybe that's what you're trying to say in the middle there. But I got to tell you right now, everything I just heard, that's my guy. That's the person that I like hanging out with, I like working with, and I like being around. That just concept of, listen, I've accomplished something, and if something I've done has hit you in a way, be a little forgiving because I'm a human being that has very conflicting views on things at times. We're all complicated. People are messy. Don't think that just because one day I think something that you don't agree with means you should burn it all down. And you're also cool with it if they do that anyway. Man, do you know how healthy you are emotionally right now?
I don't know. I think it's like asking me, you know, how do you feel halfway down the river, you know, or 2/3 of the way down the river? You know, you're okay on a boat trip when you look out and you see nothing but a couple trees and a couple cows and you're cool with that too. Like you don't need like the perfect postcard mountain behind the shot you're looking at. You're cool with the lazy, slow part of the river. Tell you a quick, cool story from yesterday. Me being me, I was able to get a guide, which was awesome. I mentioned to the guide as we were coming to the end of the day that I'd once gotten the chance to, on the Mark Twain riverboat that goes around the island, I once got the chance to ride up there with the captain. I didn't say it thinking that he was going to be able to do anything. And so that's the last thing we went to the day and was saying goodbye to the guy. And then he introduced me to one of the cast members and he said, this one will take care of you. And what did she do? She took me and my kids up to the captain's box, you know, which you got to have a little juice to do. And the lady let my son drive the boat. You want to talk about being happy. You know what I'm saying? And of course I told my kid, like, by the way, nobody was getting me in any captain's box when I was your age. And I'm not even saying it from the standpoint of I expect my son to understand. I was happy for him and he loved it and it was cool. And my daughter was totally into it and they were both driving the boat and it's all good. I'm saying that's my happiness. My happiness is my ability to provide for my children something that I didn't have. I think every parent understands that. So to your point, and I think your point's beautiful, it's like I don't really know what healthy is because I don't know what healthy is. You understand? I only know what makes me feel right. My version of healthy, I've said before, I got from television and not good television, like bad 70s from California television extolling a bunch of values, which I now realize are really shallow, but that's what I thought, you know, Brady Bunch. I thought that's about as deep as it got. My family is way more complicated than that. And as you can imagine, and of course I'm talking about, you know, the power of karma and genetics, but my children are complicated people. That's probably no surprise. If you know my partner, very intelligent, but her own version of complicated from a completely different familial system and background. So our children are like wild animals, you know, but they're smart and they're cool and they can step up to a moment like, right, you know, driving the boat around on the island. So that's my happiness, right? It's not just, hey, my kid gets this cool experience, which is somewhat obviously born of my own success in life. It's my son can lean into the experience in a way that I couldn't have it when I was his age because somebody was cracking me over the head with a frying pan with routine malice. And to kind of wrap this up, again, not asking for sympathy, just acceptance and understanding. Look at my life and appreciate where I've been cracked routinely over the head with a frying pan and along the way invited people to crack me over the head with a frying pan, right? You know what I'm saying? It's like, if you see a pattern there, well, that's where those patterns come from. Does that make me better than I am? No. Does that mean you should sympathize with me? No. Does that mean I should get more wiggle room in my errors in life? No, not at all. I'm not asking you to judge me any less harshly. I'm saying if you want to see things, and we're using me here again as the obvious avatar to pick up, which is what we do routinely on the podcast. We hold up Billy Corgan, the avatar, and we kind of spin him around and look for the cracks and little flecks in the paint. You can appreciate how this crazy person went down this particular path, which I would not recommend for anybody. I wouldn't recommend for my own enemies. But we're at a point now where we can kind of hit pause occasionally, look back, appreciate autumn and why it's conceived the way it is, and then also understand where this goes. If you want to take it on the character end, well, is there a sequel to autumn? Yeah, I can conceive of that, and we've kind of flirted with the idea here. I can still see where there's maybe one, you know, jokingly in quotations, masterwork to go. But what really matters to me, and this is where I send my love to everybody, is my own happiness. Part of that happiness is being okay with spilling these things out on the table to Kyle's previous question and just picking them up and saying, yeah, that wasn't a good idea, or that was misguided. Or here's where they started calling you that funny name and you go, yeah, I don't really care about that. I mean, that's some B-level shiz, right? That's for the marks, to use the wrestling term. The marks can argue about, you know, who went over in the main event. You and I know, Kyle, Joe, and I know, like the real battle in professional wrestling is what goes on behind the curtain, not out in front of the fans. That's the easy part, really. So it's the same thing with the band, right? It's what goes on behind the curtain that's the tough part. Getting up on stage and playing some songs that we already know people like, throwing in ones that they don't know, you know, that's way, way easy. Anyway, we've talked at length about all these things. It's a fantastic opportunity to share, to grow. I thank my partners. Gentlemen, I'm going to give you the last word this time around.
Well, yeah, and speaking of happiness, I hope you're happy listening to the 33 podcast with William Patrick Corgan. Exciting times to come. Isn't that right, Kyle? We're heading to Mexico. We're heading to Australia. I'm looking forward to it.
Said it at the top of the hour. You said it as well. We've all said it. Folks, life is hard. It is short. The only thing guaranteed is that we are not going to make all of this together through alive in the end. So you never know what's going to happen. Appreciate what you have. Find your happiness without hurting somebody around you. And just appreciate, appreciate, appreciate. Because frankly, it's all fleeting. And who knows if there's some grander scheme there. For 33, the podcast, I'm Kyle Davis. That's Joe Galli. That's William Patrick Corrigan. You've got three guys trying to get through life however the hell they can. And thank you for being a part of that. Oh, my alarm went off. I'm supposed to wake up.
That's the perfect ending. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week. Kyle's going to Kyle.
The great part is not only did Kyle, but Kyle's actually asleep. He's not even awake. Now he's going to wake up. Goodbye, everyone.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman,
Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.